I have to make something clear before we start. This is not my story. Some of my friends are really into urban exploration, and they came across this diary in an abandoned building in the woods. I don't know the exact location, and I didn't ask. They brought this to me because they know I'm interested in paranormal things, and I chose to upload it here. I did paraphrase some things, cut the incoherent ramblings of some parts, and changed the indirect to direct speech to make it easier to read for you. But for the most part, of course, this is taken directly from the diary. It's a long story, so I decided to split it into three parts. Enough of my rambling. Here's part one.
To anyone who reads this, please promise to tell my story. I need people to know about this. That's why I'm taking my time to write everything down. So, if you come across this, heed my warning. Stay away from Emerald Bay. Let me start from the beginning. The first thing I remember is walking through the woods. I didn't know how I got there, what woods I was wandering through, or where I was going. My mind was flickering. I had trouble piecing any coherent thoughts together. All I knew was that I had to keep walking. My clothes were torn. I wore no shoes, and the coarse ground hurt my feet. I pushed strands of hair from my eyes and felt my skin burning hot against my fingers. Noises were coming from all around me, cracking twigs and rustling leaves and growling animals. My head was spinning. My vision blurred again and again. I could hardly focus on what was in front of me as I walked. I tripped over roots a few times and stumbled, but never fell. I wouldn't have been able to stand up again if I had fallen. I didn't know where I was going, but I didn't change direction once. The woods were stirring. I felt someone watching me. My whole body hurts. My legs were shaking, and I expected to collapse any moment. The fever was burning right through my body and fried the remains of my brain. I heard owls since my consciousness had come back, and the noise distracted me more than it should. I stumbled again. The ground came dangerously close, but I gripped a nearby tree to stay on my feet. The wood crumbled beneath my hands, and my fingers dug deeper into it. I quickly pulled my hand back, and it was covered in a dark liquid now, but I couldn't identify it in the pale moonlight. I looked up and saw an owl sit on the ground in front of me. It turned its head towards me, and its eyes were those of a human, staring at me, unblinking. I stood still, watching it while it was watching me. It shook its head. I heard a low growl right behind me, and without thinking, I ignored the bird and started to run. My vision blurred. I saw a faint light between the trees and ran towards it, hot breath brushing against my back. My feet hurt. I could barely see anything. My legs were shaking. A gunshot rang through the air. I stumbled. This time I lost balance and fell. Colorful dots danced in front of my eyes. The owl sat in front of me again. Its human eyes watched me curiously before my world faded to black. When I woke up again, I lay in bed. I felt better than before. The dizziness was mostly gone, and so was the pain. My skin wasn't burning anymore. I don't know for how long I'd slept, but I had dreamed a lot. Incoherent nightmares of lightning and fire. The owl with the human eyes, a woman with long, blonde hair, and darkness. Cold, merciless darkness. I sat up and realized that I was inside a wooden house. The interior was sparse, consisting only of a bed, a desk, and two chairs, as well as a workbench. Through the windows, I could see the darkness outside, and wondered if I had slept for a very short or a very long time.
Awake, huh?
I turned around and saw a man leaning against the wall, middle-aged, gray hair, and a gray beard. He wore a long brown coat, a dark shirt, and trousers and black leather gloves. As he got closer, I saw one of his eyes was blind and surrounded by nasty white scars. I stumbled backwards until my back hit the wall behind the bed and gripped the blanket tightly, as if it could shield me.
"Won't hurt you, kid,"
he said, and stopped a few steps away from the bed.
"Thought you were dead, you know."
His words ultimately meant nothing, but I had nowhere to run anyway. I let go of the blankets and let the tension leave my body, at least until he stayed at a distance like that. "What happened?"
"Don't know,"
he shrugged.
"Found you out there while hunting, knocked out, burning with fever.
And you just decided to carry me home and let me sleep in your bed."
He shrugged again.
"You're not my prey. Couldn't let you freeze out there."
Not his prey. The words made my guts twist. I didn't want to think about what he would have done to me if I were his prey. I shivered.
"Who the hell are you anyway?"
"Hunter."
"Is that your name or your profession?"
I then asked. Confusion flashed across his face. His unlike eyes narrowed.
"Both,"
he replied, but it was more of a question than an answer. I decided to drop the matter, since there was still the possibility that I was dealing with an unstable psychopath. He hadn't hurt me while I had slept, but he could still snap at any moment. I was still weak and had no idea where I was, but most likely I was stuck with that guy in the middle of the woods at night. Not the place to take risks, for sure.
"What do you hunt?"
I asked instead. He moved, and I tensed immediately, but he stayed away from the bed. Instead, he walked over to the table and sat down on one of the chairs.
"My prey."
That, of course, did nothing to ease my worries.
"Your prey isn't human, right?"
"Human,"
he repeated, and laughed hoarsely.
"No, not human."
A small knife lay on the desk. He grabbed it and began to sharpen the rusty blade. I didn't like the fact that he was holding a knife now, but at least he was far enough away that I would have time to flee if he decided to attack me with it. He was strange. Either he didn't know what he was hunting, or he didn't want to tell me. But he seemed honest when he stated it wasn't human. At least I wasn't stuck with a cannibal.
"You have a name, kid?"
The question felt like a punch in the face. I knew I had a name. Of course I had one. Everyone had a name. But I couldn't remember it. I couldn't remember anything. I knew about the forest, my confusion, the fever, but nothing before that. I tried to think, to conjure up any memory, but my mind shattered at the slightest attempt. It hurt. White pain flashed right through my skull. I didn't know who I was. My breath hitched.
"Kay," I finally choked out. "My name. I knew my name. And everything else was a blur, and I couldn't breathe because I'd forgotten everything. All I had was that name, and the small vignettes that flashed through my mind, the images of a woman with long, blonde hair and warmth. I knew my name. Kayla Chase."
I couldn't remember the woman's face. All I remembered was her blonde hair and her warmth, and that I had loved her. My wife. Had I been married? I loved that woman. I was sure about that. But I couldn't remember her name. I had dreamed about her while sweating the fever out. She had worn a wedding dress in the dream. She was most likely my wife, right? The hunter put his knife down.
"Breathe, kid,"
he told me.
"I'm trying."
I leaned forward, desperately trying to catch my breath. Amnesia. Goddamn amnesia. I tried to think, to remember, but my thoughts were bouncing back and forth. I couldn't reach anything, and it hurt so, so much. "I'm Kayla Chase," I repeated. Maybe saying things out loud would help.
"Got that, kid."
"I'm not talking to you," I snapped, still breathless. "Sorry. Sorry, I'm just... I need to collect my thoughts." He simply nodded and turned to his knife again. "I'm married," I continued. "There was a car. My wife." The images blurred, but I remembered the sound of a car engine. My wife, still without a face, but smiling. The woods. My wife. She had to be somewhere here. I looked down to my hands and basically saw the small, silver wedding ring with the blue crystal, even though it was no longer on my finger. Lost in the woods, most likely. I knew three things. My name was Kayla Chase. I was married. I had to look for my wife. "Where am I?" I asked the hunter.
"My house."
I sighed. This wasn't going anywhere. I mean...
"Listen, kid."
He interrupted me.
"Don't know. You're in my house in the woods. Can't tell you more."
I looked at him. An old man, skinny and sickly pale, and dressed in dirty clothes, hunting a prey even he didn't know about. He couldn't tell me anything else, because he didn't know. Something was so very wrong with this place. Owls had human eyes here. "The thing that followed me, was that your prey?" I asked him.
"No, no."
"But you shot it, right?" He shook his head.
"Missed."
I wasn't afraid of him anymore. I was afraid of the place I was stranded in. Something was off. These woods, this hunter, the prey, the owl, my amnesia. There was something just not right about all these things, and I was still a bit dizzy. Thinking about it was way harder than it should be.
"How long have you been hunting it already?"
He looked confused again, blinked once, twice, and put the blade back down.
"A while,"
he answered.
"Time's weird."
Time was certainly a lot of things, but weird was not one of those words that would have come to my mind. Maybe he was insane. It would make so much more sense to think that. Two people who have lost their mind, sitting in a cabin in the woods. The owl had just been a dream of my fever-ridden mind, and so had been the prey. I cursed myself for thinking anything else, but wasn't it understandable, considering my amnesiac mind? I pointed at the window.
"How long until sunrise?"
"Just told you, kid. Time's weird."
I thought of someone else who was way weirder than time, but I didn't say that out loud. There was no reason to argue with him anyway. I had to find my wife and get out of here, wherever I was. Or maybe just a phone somewhere and call the police. Either way, finding actual civilization was my main goal for now. Getting the police involved was part two, and then I'd get my wife. I got out of the bed and brushed dirt and debris from my body.
"I need to go to the nearest town," I told the hunter.
"Figured as much,"
he replied.
"Shouldn't be too far if you follow the light."
He took the knife once again, spun it in his hand so the blade was between his fingers, and held it in my direction.
"You might need this."
I took the blade from him.
"Thank you for everything."
He shrugged and stood up.
"Be careful out there, kid,"
he said, and walked over to his workbench. He took the shotgun that was placed there, and I gripped my newly acquired knife tighter, ready to fight him if he decided to do something stupid, but he held it towards the ground.
"Need to get back to my hunt,"
he explained, and went outside without another word to me. Definitely insane, I decided. At least I had a weapon now. Most likely I wasn't going to need it, ever, but it certainly couldn't help to carry it around for a while. I exited the house barely a minute after the hunter had left, but the man was nowhere to be seen. Disappeared into the darkness of the forest, apparently. I turned towards the cabin again to close the door, but it had already fallen shut behind me, and there was no light visible through the window. I hadn't turned the light off when I left. A cold chill ran down my spine. I held on to my knife. I should reach the town and get the police involved as soon as possible. The faint light the hunter had mentioned glowed on the horizon, and I began to walk towards it. Cold wind tugged on my torn clothes and made me shiver again. I heard the owl again, but I didn't turn to look at it. I didn't want to know if it still had human eyes. The tower was much nearer than I had expected after seeing the distant lights. It was hard to say for how long I walked, considering I had no watch or phone with me, but I wasn't even exhausted when I arrived at the sign that said, "Welcome to Emerald Bay." Did I know this town? The name certainly didn't trigger any memories. Most houses lay dark in front of me. Streetlights flickered and barely lit the road. The town was deserted and eerily silent. Of course, I didn't know what time it was, but wasn't there always somebody outside? Yet, the silence was absolutely deafening. I couldn't even hear cars in the distance. With the knife tightly in my right hand, I stepped onto the road and walked towards the center of the town that was apparently Emerald Bay. There was not a single car on either side of the street, not even parked ones. The houses all looked similar, rectangle, multi-apartment buildings in plain colors. Some windows were lit, but no people could be seen in them. My footsteps echoing from the asphalt was the only sound for several minutes, and I got paranoid, looking behind me every few seconds because I felt watched, like something was following me. But no matter how often I looked, there was nothing to be seen in the darkness behind me. I only needed to find the police station, I thought. As soon as I got there, everything would be fine. They would find out who I am and how I got here. They would get my wife and send us home, and I could recover from the amnesia with her help. It would be okay. Of course it would be. I still had no idea where I was going. For a while, there was nothing but the road and the apartment complexes and the flickering lights. The full moon stood on a cloudless sky, and it hadn't moved an inch since I had started to walk from the hunter's house. The knife felt heavier in my hand. There were no street signs, no road names, no numbers on the houses. I walked for a while, and had yet to see a single car. I felt like I was in a survival horror game. I liked them, right, before. There was a faint memory of me sitting on the living room floor and screaming at stupid jump scares, and someone next to me, my wife. I could hear her laughing as if she was actually with me. There was finally a corner right ahead of me, and I got a bad feeling. Nothing I could name, just a general uneasiness. The temperatures around me seemed to drop a few degrees as I got closer. There was a street lamp right at the corner, and it flickered so fast that it almost made me dizzy. It was still silent. I held the knife in front of my body, blade facing away from me. My heart was racing. I didn't want to go. I wanted to turn around and run, yet I had no reason to. There was still nobody around. I reached the street lamp. At first, I didn't realize what I was looking at. My mind just couldn't process the sight. I was frozen in place, and stared at what lay under the lamp, illuminated by the flickering light. It was bloody, pale, but very bloody. clothes tearing at the seams, remains of a police uniform on a broken body. Head facing in the wrong direction, eyes wide with terror, bleeding from oh so many wounds. Mouth open in a silent scream. Face sliced open beyond recognition. The first human I came across in this godforsaken town was a dead policeman. I screamed in horror, disrupting the unsettling silence, and fell to my knees, coughing and gagging, and almost threw up as I finally understood that I was looking at a corpse. My body was shaking like crazy. I couldn't tear my eyes away from the horrifying sight. Just stared at the backwards-facing head while not being able to catch my breath. As I finally looked up, I felt my heart stop for a moment. Right in front of me stood a man. A tall man in a light gray suit and a gray hat. I froze in place, unable to move even an inch. The man simply pointed at the corpse. I looked again and realized that the policeman held a gun in his broken hand. As I lifted my head again, the gray-clothed man had disappeared without a trace again, as if he had never existed at all. That's when I covered my face with my hands and started to cry. I was sick to my stomach. This town was cursed. I was sure about that. There was a dead man right in front of me. I didn't know what had killed him, and some sort of ghost had appeared right beside me, and suddenly I was sure I was going to die here. I wouldn't find a police station. Nobody would help me here. The moon still hadn't moved. I cried until I couldn't breathe anymore. My memories were still a blur, hazy and just out of reach, hidden behind locked doors and stone walls. But right between the blurred images and unreachable memories, there were flashes of my wife that were almost clear. Her, in a white dress, smiled at me. "You're perfect, Kayla. Our wedding." Her name was on the tip of my tongue. I shoved my hands into my hair as if that would somehow assist my thinking. Her name. I knew her name. She was my wife. I loved her. Of course I knew her name. "Dear." My eyes fell upon the gun in the corpse's hand. Dia was here, somewhere. I refused to believe that she was dead. Not as long as I hadn't seen her body. I still wasn't sure what was going on and how to make sense of any of this. My wife and I had come here together and got separated. I had lost my memory. Now I was in a cursed village in an eternal night. I was trembling. It felt like my body would give in as soon as I tried to move. But I had to. For Dia. I had to find her and get both of us out of town as quickly as possible. I could piece the missing information together when we were safe again. I swallowed my nausea and ripped the gun out of the corpse's stiff hand. Touching the cold skin made me shiver. But as soon as I held the weapon in my hands, I felt better. Without even thinking, I checked how many bullets I had left in the gun, and was pleasantly surprised when I saw that only one was missing. Then it hit me. How the hell did I know how to handle a gun? My memories showed nothing but fog regarding this. I'd ask Dia about it as soon as I found her, and I didn't allow myself to doubt for a second that I would find her. I put the knife in my pocket and kept the gun in my hands. A vulture landed beside me and looked up. It had the same eyes as the owl. Human eyes. I aimed the gun to its head. It blinked, turned towards the corpse, and started picking on the exposed flesh. I lowered the gun again. Wasting a bullet on that thing would be ridiculous. The eyes were unsettling, but that was the least of my problems, considering the dead man and the ghost. I didn't want to watch the vulture pick the body apart, so I turned around the corner and walked away. This place was cursed. I didn't even know where to go to get away from here. It still felt like lightning was flashing through my brain. I felt dizzy, but I knew two things. My name was Kayla Chase. I had to find my wife. The street stretched out towards the dark horizon, and I tried to remember what a sunrise looked like. The memory was faded, almost colorless. I hoped I'd see another one, but maybe when Dia and I got out of here. Driving away together towards the rising sun. The gun was cold and heavy in my hand as I walked down the road. There were no cars, no people, just never-changing apartment complexes. I wasn't sure what exactly I was searching for, but I assumed I'd recognized it as soon as I came across it. My mind kept returning to the dead policeman, and the memory made me sick. I wondered what had killed him. Hopefully I wouldn't come across the thing, but I wouldn't hesitate shooting it if I did. Assuming that bullets would stop it, of course. This town was cursed, after all. Birds had human eyes here, and corpses lay on the streets. I walked without expecting to reach the end of the road. For how long, I couldn't tell. Quite a while, without anything ever changing, until suddenly, I saw the man in the gray suit again. I came to a sudden halt and lifted the gun. Maybe it wouldn't do anything against the ghost, but I would try. The weapon trembled in my hands. The gray man, as I decided to call this thing, didn't move at all. Overall, he didn't seem hostile. He just stood next to the door of one of the buildings and pointed towards said door. His gray eyes stared at me. His expression was completely neutral.
"You want me to go inside?" I asked him, my voice sounding strange in the silence. He didn't react at all. "Why should I trust you?" I continued. "You could lead me into a trap."
Still no answer from him. He had shown me the gun, I remembered. Something about him made my skin crawl, but he wasn't hostile towards me, and I needed all the help I could get. Slowly, still with the gun pointed at him, I walked towards the door. His eyes followed me, but he didn't move at all. As soon as I grabbed the handle of the door, he simply vanished without a warning. Seeing him just fade out of existence like that made me jump, but I calmed down quickly. At least he didn't attack me or anything. I pushed the door open, and instead of the stairs I'd expected, I entered a decent-looking flat. It was dimly lit and completely devoid of any personality, a little like a hotel room. At first, I checked each of the three available rooms for possible threats, gun always in my hand, but as it turned out, the apartment was completely empty. The gray man had led me to a safe place. As I was sure there were no threats in the immediate proximity, I allowed myself to collapse on the sofa. My head hurt. I was confused and desperate. I barely knew who I was stranded in a cursed town. My wife was lost and maybe in danger, and I had absolutely no idea where to go. I tried to remember, tried until my head hurt even more, and nothing came from it. Fragments. That was all I had. Dia's laughter. Her wedding dress. The way she had smiled.
"You're perfect, Kayla."
The car. A fading sunrise. Lightning. Fire. Cold. Merciless. Darkness. And the woods, when suddenly, everything was clear again. I lay flat on the sofa and cried for a life I couldn't remember. At some point, I fell asleep, and when I woke up again, the light in the kitchen was turned on. I knew I had turned it off when I had left the kitchen after checking it. It took a few seconds until I had recovered from my intense dreams enough to realize what that meant. Again, my nightmares had shown fire and darkness. The pain I had felt was still echoing through my body, even though I was awake now. The only pleasant thing about it had been the images of Dia that were way clearer in my dreams than in my memories. I forced myself to calm down, took a deep breath, and picked the gun up. Something was right there, in the kitchen. Whatever it was, I sure hoped a bullet through the head would kill it. How did I even know I could handle a gun well enough to shoot something in the head? I approached the door slowly, and just for a fraction of a second, I allowed myself to hope that I would find Dia there. That the gray man had led me directly to her. The naive hope was crushed the second I stepped over the threshold. The woman that sat over the kitchen table was definitely not my wife. She was a bit older than me, maybe around 30, white-haired and pale as a corpse. She held a needle in one hand and sewed a white string in a cross pattern right through the skin of her arm. I moved slowly, not taking my eyes off her for a second, gun pointed at the head. "Who are you?" I asked. She looked up, exposing a frail face and wide eyes. "Sit," she said, and pointed at the free chair opposite of her. No need to waste a bullet yet, I thought, and sat down, still with the gun pointed at her. My heart was racing so fast it almost hurt. She didn't appear aggressive, but just watching her sew patterns into her skin made me nauseous. That had to be incredibly painful. For a human, at least. I didn't look away for a second, but she moved faster than anyone could react. Before I could realize what was happening, she'd reached over the desk and ripped the gun out of my hand, throwing it to the other side of the room. I immediately tried to reach for my knife that I still had in my pocket, but she held both of my hands in an iron grip. I jumped from my chair. It fell backwards and hit the floor with a loud bang. I tried to free my hands, used all my strength to get away, but she didn't budge. "Let me go," I screamed at her. "Get your hands off of me, you psycho." She held both my wrists down with just one hand and picked the needle back up with the other. I should have just shot her as long as I'd had the chance. "Have you ever heard the fairy tale of the girl and the dreamer?" she asked with a serene smile on her lips. "I don't fucking care," I snapped. "Put that needle away, right now." She pushed the needle through my skin, and I screamed. Bright, cold pain flashed through my arm. I desperately tried to get free, but the woman was too strong. "Once upon a time, there was a girl who suffered terrible nightmares," she began to tell, absolutely unbothered by my agonized screams. "She dreaded every night because she knew she had to return to her horrifying mindscapes. But she had one friend there, someone who stayed by her side and helped her. She called him the Dreamer because he had no name." She began to sew my arms together. The pain made me cry. Tears obscured my vision, and I tried to blink them away. She showed no mercy, of course, just continued her cruel work. The thread was thin like a spider's web, but I wasn't able to rip it apart, no matter how hard I tried to push my arms apart. My skin ripped and bled, but the thread was too strong. "She was always so scared, but the dreamer promised her that she would wake up and everything would be all right. He told her that every nightmare had an end, and she believed him. But as the time continued, the dreams became darker and more twisted,
and the monsters were cruel. It turned into a hellscape, and she remembered the dreamer's promise. She tried to wake up, but she...
A gunshot rang through the air, and the grip around my wrists suddenly grew limp. I screamed once again, pulled my hands away, and spun around to look at the shooter. My arms were sewn together tightly. I held them in front of my body as if they could shield me from a bullet. In the door stood a rather young man. He wore dark clothes and looked disheveled. Dark brown hair hung unkempt in his face. Dark bags were under his bloodshot eyes, and he had a short beard. In his hands was a gun similar to mine, and he pointed it at me.
"You all right?"
he asked. "Here, human?" I replied, instead of an actual answer, mostly because it had to be obvious that I wasn't all right with all those stitches in my arms. He lowered his gun.
"Oh, thank God you're sane. I'm Jack Monroe. And who are you?"
"Kayla Chase. Kay."
"Nice to meet you, Kay," he said, and put the gun away. "Can I help you with your arms?"
I looked back at the girl that had done this to me. She lay dead on the desk, a bullet hole right in her forehead. Dark, almost black blood was flowing steadily from the wound and off the desk. I turned to Monroe again. "Yes, please." Another human in this godforsaken nightmare. Maybe things would finally take a turn for the better. I dared to hope for the best again. "There's a knife in my pocket," I told Monroe. Maybe it was stupid to allow a random man access to my weapon, but he had saved my life from the creepy seamstress, and I definitely needed help. There was no way I would get the threads out all by myself. He stepped closer and retrieved the knife, thankfully without touching me any more than absolutely necessary.
"I'll cut it. Just sit still, yeah?"
he told me, and as soon as I nodded, he brought the blade to my arms and carefully cut the threads. When I was finally free again, I slowly pulled the loose threads from the wounds and let them fall onto the floor. I was bleeding, but it wasn't as bad as I'd expected. It stung a little, nothing more. Monroe handed me the knife when I was finished. I put it away again and went to pick up my own gun from the floor. Having my weapons back made me feel a little safer. I wouldn't even be surprised if the seamstress stood up again. "What was this?" I asked, and gestured towards the dead woman.
"Nothing human, for sure," Monroe shrugged. "I'll say let's stick to zombie rules, yeah? Shoot through the head, burn the bodies."
The dead woman had stopped bleeding. I nodded. "Burning sounds good," I agreed, and began to search the kitchen for a lighter. Already, the second drawer contained a box of matches, and I turned around with a victorious smile. But Monroe already held a lighter and a can of pure alcohol in his hands. Well, having a source for fire couldn't hurt. I put the tinderbox away and watched Monroe pour the alcohol over the corpse.
"We should get out of here, quick," he said. "Saving your life would be a little useless if we burned here."
Yeah, right. Thank you for that."
"No problem." He lit his lighter. "Come on, let's go."
He lit the trail of liquid on the table, and before I even realized, a bright flame traveled towards the body, and it went up in flames. Monroe grabbed my hand and pulled me out of the kitchen while our surroundings caught on fire. We stumbled to the open front door until we were on the road again. I looked up. The moon still hadn't moved. Monroe grinned at me.
"Barely knew you for 10 minutes, and we've already committed arson. I think this is the beginning of a great friendship, Kay."
But I wasn't going to take any chances this time. I grabbed him by his shirt and held the gun to his head.
"If you think I trust you," I hissed, "you are very wrong."
Hey, calm down."
He raised his hands defensively.
"I could have killed you a couple times in there.
But I didn't, right? I saved you.
Yeah, well, that bitch in there seemed really nice too, before she sewed my fucking arms together.
I replied, pressing the cold metal of the gun harder against his forehead.
So, I have questions, and if you don't want a bunch of bullets in your brain, you better answer them. Got it?
I wasn't sure if it was clever to threaten a potential ally like that, but in all honesty, I was scared. This town was cursed. My arms had just been sewn together, and I didn't want a similar situation to happen with Monroe. I was grateful that he saved me, but for all I knew, that man could still be some sort of monster. At the moment, I had the upper hand, and I had to use that as long as I could.
All right, Monroe agreed. Ask your questions. I just don't know if I can help.
How did you find me there?
I pointed at the burning building.
Heard you screaming. You sounded human, so I thought I'd check.
He answered.
Right in time, I guess.
I nodded slowly. Not that absurd of an explanation.
All right. I don't remember anything.
I told him honestly.
Just explain this shit here to me, okay? Where are we?
You lost your memories?
I shoved the gun against his skin again.
Answer the question.
Hey, Kay, calm down. I lost my memories too,
he told me, slightly unnerved.
How much do you remember?
My name,
I said, putting the gun down. I woke up in the forest. Everything before that was blurry.
All I know is that I came here with my wife, Dia. I have to find her.
Now it wasn't that great. I thought I finally had a lead, but it turned out to be a dead end. This town was weird, and I really, really despised it.
Similar case with me, except the wife, of course, he replied with a weak smile. Dia, you say?
Yeah. Have you seen her? About my age, long blonde hair, really beautiful.
He hesitated for a moment.
No, sorry. You're the first sane person I met around here.
It felt horrible to get my hopes crushed over and over again. I was grasping at every little thread, only to have them crumble at the slightest touch. Dia was out of reach. I knew she was somewhere near, and still had no idea how to find her. My head hurt again.
We should stick together, Monroe said. As far as we know, we're the only sane people around here.
Except Dia.
I refused to believe that she had died. She was all right. I would find her. I would take her home.
I accept your wife, he agreed. You know what? We'll find her and get out of here. How's that sound?
Too good to be true.
I crossed my arms.
So, are you in?
He asked, holding his hands out.
We should give it a try, at least. I mean, we handled the psycho seamstress, didn't we?
My arms still stung from the stitches. I thought handled was an overstatement, considering how we had managed to kill her. But the end result was all the same. We had won against something inhuman. We had survived this nightmare up to this point. And in all honesty, I knew he was right. Staying together would be safer. I grabbed his hand.
Fine. We're partners. For now.
He smiled.
Arsonist buddies it is. I'm sure this will be fun.
I wish I had your fucking optimism.
I replied sarcastically, and rolled my eyes. I looked back to the house we had left, and saw the remaining flames glowing dimly through the windows. I would definitely need therapy when this was over.
So, any idea where to go?
I asked my new partner. It wasn't like I trusted him. The gun was in my hand, the knife within reach. I wouldn't let my guard down around him any more than necessary. If he truly was on my side, great. I would need an ally. And if he wasn't, well, I wouldn't hesitate this time.
Down the road, he shrugged. We'll see where this leads us.
I rolled my eyes.
Amazing, I muttered, but followed him regardless. We walked down the silent road, and somehow his presence was comforting to me. My distrust aside, he was a living, breathing human, and not being all alone in this cursed place was definitely reassuring.
You think we're the only ones?
I asked him, just to break the deafening silence. We walked side by side. I stayed maybe half a step behind him so he couldn't possibly attack me from behind, just in case.
Well, you're the first person I found here after a while, I guess. Hard to tell how long, with that never-ending night.
He pointed to the unmoving moon. I don't think there's anyone else. Nothing human, at least. I sighed.
I wish I knew how we got here. And why us? I mean...
The sentence was left unfinished, because, to be honest, I didn't even know what I meant. Not enough to express it, at least. Why was I here? And why Monroe and Dia? How did the three of us end up here?
I don't care much about the why, he answered, as long as we get out of this shit show.
I stared at him and tried to remember something, but my foggy brain didn't show me anything. He looked entirely unfamiliar.
You think we came here together?
I asked anyway. Maybe my memory was deceiving me.
Would explain some things, huh?
Yeah.
He shrugged again. We'll find out when we're back in the real world. I didn't trust him in the slightest. He may have saved my life, but he was way too calm in a situation like this and too disinterested in finding out what was going on. Of course, I could only talk for myself, but I desperately wanted to figure all of this out. I wanted to remember. More than anything else, I wanted my damn memories back. So how could he care so little? We walked in silence for a while. I barely took my eyes off him and held the gun tightly in my hand. As I noticed movement in my periphery, I jumped a little and almost raised my weapon. But it was just the gray man, the one who had led me to the empty apartment. He stood on the side of the road, unmoving. His colorless eyes were fixed onto Monroe.
Okay?
Monroe, who had noticed my little jump, asked.
You all right?
He didn't see the gray man. I wasn't sure what it meant that the ghost was only visible to me. If it was a good sign, or a very bad one.
Yeah, it's nothing. I'm fine.
I quickly reassured him. If the gray man didn't want to show himself to Monroe, I certainly wouldn't mention him. We continued our walk, and I gave the gray man a questioning look as we passed him, but he did not at all react. His eyes just followed Monroe. I didn't turn around to see whether the ghost had disappeared after we passed him. My attention was focused on Monroe, who I expected to turn on me any second. He was only human, I reminded myself. This wasn't some monster like the seamstress. He was merely a man. And bullets could kill a man. And yet, nothing happened for quite some time. It was hard to say for how long, since neither the position of the moon nor our surroundings changed.
The seamstress told me something, you know,
I said at some point, as I couldn't stand the silence anymore.
Some fairy tale about a girl and a dreamer.
He didn't even bother to look at me.
So?
So, I thought we could figure out what the hell's going on here, and this little story could help.
Why do you care so much?
He replied.
For real, Kay. I don't give a shit about what this place is, and especially not about the insane rambling of some monster.
I felt anger burning in my chest, bright and hot enough to almost suffocate me. My first instinct was to lash out at him, to hurt him somehow, just to get the anger out, to ask him how he expected me to stay calm, almost indifferent in a situation like this. I shoved the thoughts away.
I woke up in a forest,
I told him instead, as calmly as I could manage.
Without memory,
and burning with fever. Excuse me, but I want to know how I got into a situation like that.
A forest?
He finally looked at me. Yes. What's so interesting about that?
He didn't answer right away, and I found myself growing tense under his tired gaze.
Nothing.
He then said, It's just a weird place to wake up. Maybe, just maybe, I was paranoid. But at that point, I was sure he was hiding something from me. My mind was racing. I was trying to figure out what to do now. He knew something, whatever that was. I tried to think of something to say, some clever response, some question that could make him give away some details. But then I saw the gray man pointing at another door. After miles and miles of identical houses, there was finally something different. The house the gray man pointed at was slightly smaller than the others had been, and the color was off. I stared and wondered if I really should follow the gray man's lead once again. Last time, he had led me to the seamstress. Who knew where this door would lead? I was scared, and definitely not interested in meeting another monster, and yet this was the only clue I got. I wouldn't find Dia by walking down a never-changing road for all eternity.
It's different, I told Monroe, pointing towards the house, just like the gray man did. I'll go in. Just wait here, and if I'm not back in, I don't know, 15 minutes, come and look for me.
All right. Be careful in there, Kay.
He agreed, almost immediately. I actually felt like vomiting at that response. He had absolutely no way to tell how much time would pass. We both knew that. I nodded and turned around, glancing over my shoulder again and again, because I was afraid he would kill me as soon as I turned my back on him. I looked at the gray man, but he did not react. As soon as I pushed the door open, he vanished again. I stepped inside a large, empty room, and the door fell shut behind me. A naked light bulb illuminated my surroundings. The floor was made of off-white tiles, and the walls were bare and white. There were only two things in the entire room: a wooden chair and a hanged man. I couldn't even see what the rope was attached to. The ceiling was too high up and hidden in the shadows. The fraying rope seemed to appear from nowhere and wrapped around the neck of the middle-aged man. He wore a black suit, had long blonde hair, and was definitely dead. It was the third corpse I saw here, and it was still horrifying. I pointed the gun at it, just in case, and approached it slowly. The gray man had led me here. There had to be a reason. Did I know the dead man? Was he someone from my past? Unlikely, but not impossible. I got closer to get a better look at his face. Maybe it would trigger some memories. He hung in the center of the room, and it seemed to stretch endlessly. For a moment, I wondered if I was walking on the same spot, because I didn't seem to make any progress towards the body. But when I turned around, the door was already far away. This place was weird. I prayed that Dia was all right, wherever she was. Suddenly, the corpse's head jerked up. It looked straight at me, eyes pale and rigid like those of a dead fish. I stumbled backwards. It opened its mouth, and a black beetle crawled out of it. I raised the gun. My finger was on the trigger. I didn't move.
What do you want?
The dead man asked without moving his mouth.
I'm looking for my wife.
My hands were trembling slightly. The gray man wanted me to go here. Maybe this hanged man would help somehow. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure about anything. But Dia was lost, and I was grasping at every straw I could find, even if it meant I had to follow a ghost and talk to corpses. The gray man had shown me the weapon. he had to be on my side.
I don't know your wife,
the hanged man answered. More beetles crawled out of the open mouth and scattered all over the body. Of course he didn't.
Do you know the fairy tale of the girl and the dreamer?
I asked instead. I still felt like the story had some sort of significance, and I would follow every little trace that could lead me to Dia, however unlikely it was. Even if it would only help me to understand this place a little better, it was at least a start.
I do.
What happens after she tries to wake up, after the nightmares turn violent?
She tries to wake up, but she can't,
the dead man said.
Her friend, the dreamer, tells her to find the wizard in his castle behind the woods so we can help her. So the girl travels through the deep, dark woods, and she barely escapes death. Vile beasts hunt her through the forest, but she manages to outrun each of them.
Some of the beetles crawled over to me and began to climb my body. I slapped them away.
She finds a cemetery, and the vengeful spirits try to pull her to her grave, but she escapes them and leaves the forest behind. As the castle of the wizard lies in front of her, she hopes for the dreamer's promise to come true. She is sure the nightmare will end.
A beetle had reached my face. I slapped it off again. I noticed the movement right behind the hanged man. The gray man had appeared again, face expressionless as always, and he pointed at something behind me. The hanged man had fallen silent. I spun around and faced Monroe, who was pointing a gun at me. Everything happened very quickly after that. I remember the trigger being pulled at least twice, the gunshots echoing from the bare walls so loud it was deafening, blood splattering everywhere, and a sudden sharp pain right through my skull. The next thing I knew was the cold floor against my skin, and an agonizing headache. I felt lightning strike in my brain. Painfully bright light flashed behind my closed eyes. Everything was too hot, too cold, too much. I was hyper aware of the torn clothes touching my skin, of the cold tiles under me. Every fiber of my body screamed in terror as I realized I had been shot. I don't know how long I lay there, trying to piece a coherent thought together. My mind was flashing, breaking, burning. All I could think was that I should be dead already, that a bullet had pierced right through my head, and that it shouldn't take that long for me to die. I opened my eyes, and everything was too bright. The colors burnt my vision, and I wanted to scream, but not a single noise left my mouth, because I couldn't open it. A beetle crawled over my face again. Its tiny legs felt way too heavy. After what felt like seconds and days at the same time, a soothing darkness took over, and I was sure it was over now. I was dead. The shadows eased the pain and swallowed the bright lights in my head. The lightning strikes finally ceased, and I was able to breathe again. Had I held my breath? I couldn't remember. When I opened my eyes, I was alive. I stayed down at first, still dizzy after what had happened, and looked at my surroundings. Monroe, the damn traitor, was gone. A pool of blood on the floor was the only indication that he had been there. The hanged man was lifeless now, his head hanging low and his eyes closed. Black beetles were scattered all around me, some climbing around on my body. The gray man was gone. The bullets must have missed, I thought. Yet, I slowly raised my hands to my forehead, and it came away bloody. I turned around and found a puddle of blood behind me where my head had lain, as well as a bullet.
Jack Monroe had shot me in the head. I was still alive. I stumbled onto my feet and hastily brushed the insects off my body. I should be dead. By all accounts, I should not be alive. And yet, here I stood. A bullet through my brain had left me with nothing but a bloody face and a slight headache. I don't understand. There was not a single explanation that I could come up with. I wanted to go home to my wife. This was insane. Monroe was gone, and I was worried where he was, afraid that he could attack me again at any moment. And yet, what could he do? I had survived a deadly gunshot. Maybe he had no option to kill me, for whatever reason. Was he a ghost, too? Could he not interact with a living person like that? Could he not harm them? But if that was the case, why had I bled? I felt sick. The hanged man stayed motionless, and I figured there was no use staying in this room. I desperately wanted to understand what all that meant, but that had to wait. First, I had to find Dia and get out of here. Everything else had to be a problem for another day. I picked the gun off the floor, checked if the knife and the tinderbox were still where they were supposed to be, and walked towards the door. The room didn't stretch this time. As I stepped outside, the gray man was waiting for me by the side of the street. No sign of Monroe anywhere. I walked up to the ghost, who did not react at all, except his bland stare I had already become familiar with.
"You're trying to help me, right? You showed me the weapon and the clues. You tried to warn me about Monroe,"
I said with a weak smile. My head was still pounding. He just stared at me.
"Thank you,"
I told him, as sincerely as I could manage. He stared.
"The fairy tale is more than just a story, isn't it? That's why you want me to hear it."
He stared. I sighed. This wasn't going anywhere.
"I'll follow it. In which direction is the wizard's castle? I can't remember how to get to the woods."
And finally, he lifted his hand and pointed in the direction where the woods were already visible in the distance. I nodded, made the first steps down the road, and turned around again.
"Do you know why I didn't die?"
I asked. He stared.
"Of course."
I nodded again.
"Still, thank you."
He faded out of sight, and I turned away to continue my way down the road. The woods grew closer quickly, and therefore I knew I was on the right track. I had yet to find out how the story of the girl and the dreamer ended, but I was optimistic. Fairy tales had happy endings. The children killed the evil witch and returned to their parents. I was going to find whoever was waiting for me beyond the woods. I was going to find Dia. We would return home. I'd get my memories back, and everything would be all right. I wouldn't need to think about this horrific place ever again. I wouldn't need to think about my death again. Thinking about how I had survived was useless. I'd ask the wizard about it as soon as I met him. For now, I had to focus on getting through the woods. Everything would be fine after that. It had to be. I was going to find Dia. That's what I told myself as the road ended and trees surrounded me. I would see another sunrise. Everything would be okay.
The woods were dark. Large trees drown out the moonlight, and yet it was always bright enough for me to see my surroundings. The eerie silence had returned once more. All I could hear were dry leaves and twigs breaking under my feet. The fairy tale had mentioned beasts who hunted the girl through the forest, and I sure hoped the story wasn't to be taken literally. The prospect of finding Dia was all that kept me on my feet, At least my headache slowly faded, and therefore, no lasting damage seems to be done by the gunshot. It still scared me to no ends that I had survived a fatal wound without any consequences, but at the moment, I was simply grateful. I had no time for anything that slowed me down. I didn't have to walk far until I reached the hunter's cabin, the place where my little nightmare journey had begun. Dim lights were visible through the windows, and I contemplated walking in and visiting him. I approached a window. The formerly warm and welcoming house was cold now. The temperatures seemed to drop as I got closer, and I shivered. Through the window, I saw the hunter's body, pale and lifeless, his shotgun on the desk in front of him. His eyes were rigid as he stared straight ahead, unmoving. Dead. I forced myself to blink the tears away. The man who had saved me in the woods, who had given me a place to rest and a weapon to defend myself, had died. I felt nauseous. The lights grew dimmer and dimmer inside the cabin. I wanted to say something, some sort of last words, an apology, a goodbye, but the words were stuck in my throat. I turned around and faced the human-eyed owl again. I sat on the ground in front of me, and we stared at each other for a moment in complete silence. The lights went out behind me. There was nothing left to do here. I had to continue my way towards the wizard, find Dia, and go home. That was all the reason I had left. I ignored the owl and walked deeper into the forest. The shadows grew darker. The freezing wind tugged on my clothes. I held on to my gun like my life depended on it. Part of me expected a monster to emerge from the darkness, to find myself staring into glooming eyes and being torn apart by sharp teeth and claws. And yet, I couldn't bring myself to fear the dark. It was all too familiar to me to be afraid of it. I remember how the shadows numbed the pain of the gunshot, how they had been there at the beginning, when I had woken up, how they had drowned out the heat, the fire, the lightning. It was a faded, broken memory. The shadows devoured the blinding light, replacing the agonizing heat with their cold. There wasn't a lot I remembered. A car, a faded sunrise, a beautiful wedding ring with a blue crystal. Dia, her wedding dress. You're perfect, Caitlin. Fire, lightning, darkness. The wind should freeze my skin, and yet I welcomed the chill. I walked for a while, always straight ahead, and the owl followed me. For a long time, my surroundings didn't change, but I never slowed down, never changed my direction, just walked on and on until I finally reached something that marked my progress. A car. The remains of a police car in the middle of a dirt road, crashed and burnt out, the writing barely visible on the side. I figured it had belonged to the dead policeman I had found in Emerald Bay. At least I was making progress. I paid little attention to the car, just crossed the road and continued my way. The owl stayed by my side, and contrary to my expectations, no beast ever came for me. It took forever to leave the forest behind, and at the same time, I felt like no time had passed at all. But at some point, the trees disappeared. I stepped onto an open field and found my theory confirmed. The fairy tale was true. In front of me lay a graveyard. I took a deep breath, braced myself for whatever abominations would await me there, and stepped between the graves. The tombstones continued endlessly left and right of me. Each one was black and apparently empty. No name, no dates, no flowers. I lit one of my matches and carried it carefully in front of me, as if that would keep the spirits away. Wet grass brushed my legs. The cries of ravens or crows echoed over the field, yet no bird was to be seen. The heat the small flame radiated clashed with the cool night air, and its light burnt in my eyes. I looked around me, gun in my hand, ready to shoot whatever would attack me, but I seemed to be entirely alone. The cemetery was abandoned. Every bird cry in the distance made me jump a little. I quickened my pace until I was almost running. A gust of wind blew the match out, and I jumped as darkness closed in around me again. The full moon illuminated the graves, and it didn't strain my eyes as much as the flame had done, so I didn't light another match. My heart was racing, my fingers trembling, but I didn't slow down. The graves still showed no names. And after countless rows of identical tombstones, I reached the end of the path. A large, fancy grave blocked my way. A tombstone made of black marble, with a metal cross on top of it. This one had an engraving in faded, white letters. "Here lies a child who died after birth, unnamed by the parents." The dates were too withered to be read. No flowers lay there, and grass grew high and messy all around the tombstone. This had not been visited in a very long time. The owl landed in front of the tombstone and looked up at me. I looked back. I walked around the grave and realized I had reached the cemetery's end, but in front of me lay no wizard's castle, but a worn-down factory. I took a deep breath. The fairy tale had not been entirely accurate, considering I had encountered neither the beast nor the spirits. But whether I would find the wizard in a castle or a factory didn't matter to me. For all I cared, he could live in a dumpster. He needed to help me. That was all. The gray man stood next to the entrance. I was on the right path, after all. I straightened my back and stepped towards the building. It was gray, except for the red rust, and the large metal door was slightly ajar. The gray man merely looked at me and vanished, so I pushed the door open and walked in. Before me lay a long corridor. Neon lights on the ceiling illuminated everything. I raised my gun and walked, passing metal barrels and a bunch of boxes filled with iron waste. The smell of gasoline filled the air. The lights above me flickered. I looked behind me. No one was there. As I reached the end of the hall, I found myself in front of another door. That's it, I thought. I was sure I would find the wizard beyond this door, and then it would finally be over. I would find Dia. We would go home. If my role was indeed the one of the girls in the fairy tale, I would wake up from this cruel nightmare. My happy ending was waiting. I opened the door. The room was small and covered in dirt. Cobwebs hung from the ceiling and covered the machinery. Mold grew on the walls and debris was littered all over the floor. The air was hot and humid and stuck in my throat. The stench of decay almost made me sick. And in the middle of it all was a dead body. A man in a gray suit, already half decayed, leaning against the wall between cobwebs and mold. The sockets of his eyes were hollow, rotting skin stretched tightly around his skull as his clothes were falling apart. But I recognized him, nonetheless. The gray man. "No," I muttered. "I had done everything right. I had listened to the fairy tale, walked through the woods, crossed the cemetery, found the factory. He was supposed to be my wizard. He should help me to wake from this nightmare, to return to my world, to get my happy ending. But he was dead. For a very long time, he was already dead." "No," I repeated. "You can't be dead. Please,
No. I fell to my knees, sobbing. You were supposed to help me. What should I do now?
The ghost of the gray man appeared next to his own corpse, staring at me.
Why did you even lead me here, asshole?
I screamed at him.
Just to crush my hopes again?
He stared. Dia was out of reach. I had no idea how to leave this place. My last hope was dead, existing only as a mute ghost. I felt lost, hopeless, and utterly defeated. The gray man had helped me, and yet it had all been for nothing. The body in front of me was dead. He couldn't help me. Everything was lost. The ghost raised his arm to point behind me. My will to live is not yet lost. I stumbled to my feet and spun around, only to be faced with the cool metal of a gun against my forehead, and Monroe's tired eyes staring at me. He looked worse than before. His clothes were covered in blood. He was pale, and his eyes were burning with fever. I felt the heat of his body even across the distance between us. His hand trembled slightly, and he breathed shallow.
I knew it,
he hissed.
What?
She chose you.
He pressed the gun harder against my skull.
She abandoned me because she chose you. But I won't accept that. This is my role, Kayla. You won't take this away from me. I'll kill you, and I'll prove to her that I'm the right choice.
Kill me? I repeated. You tried that last time, Monroe. You know the definition of insanity. Doing the same shit over and over again and expecting a different result.
Anger was boiling inside me at this point, born from all the confusion, the fear, and the helplessness. I wanted to hurt him, whether through my words or with my fists.
I remember.
He gritted his teeth.
I shot you through the head, and here you are, still standing. She gave you a gift, you little bitch, and she took it from me. I barely healed from your bullets. She abandoned me, and that's all your damn fault.
He screamed the last words at me, face distorted into a grimace of fury.
Who are you talking about? I shouted back.
Who am I talking about? You even had the audacity to call her your fucking wife.
I clenched my hands into fists, fingernails digging deep into my skin.
Don't bring my wife into this, I hissed. She's not your wife.
His eyes were burning. Then, everything happened very fast. I realized he was about to pull the trigger, so I jerked my hand up and punched his arm as hard as possible. A shot rang through the air, but it missed my body, and I used the momentary distraction to punch Monroe in the face and run past him towards the door. There was no time to think about his mad rambling as I ran down the hallway. I had a plan. Footsteps echoed behind me, and I began to run left to right and back again to dodge the bullets. My own gun was still in my hand. I heard bullets hit the wall. A sudden, sharp pain flashed through my shoulder, and I screamed, but kept running. He had hit me. The pain was dull, pulsated in my shoulder and my entire arm. Blood was flowing steadily from the wound. Breathing was difficult. I felt dizzy, but I didn't slow down. The lights still flickered. Gunshot after gunshot echoed from the walls. Monroe screamed at me to stop, but I barely listened. Once I reached the end of the hallway, I turned around, raised the gun, and shot. Three bullets missed. One hit his stomach. One went straight through his head. He fell to the floor, and I wasted no time. Next to me was a barrel full of gasoline. or at least something similar. My arm hurt like hell, but I forced myself to ignore it as I used my full body weight to tip it over and empty the liquid onto the floor. It sparked in rainbow colors in the neon lights. Trembling fingers retrieved the tinderbox from my pocket. I was panting. My vision was cloudy. I was barely able to light the match. Monroe made a pained sound that sounded almost like, "No." I threw the match into the liquid and took a step back as I watched the floor and Jack Monroe's body go up in flames. Burning heat hit my cool skin. The pain in my shoulder was mind-numbing. Monroe was dead, once and for all.
"Zombie roll, asshole,"
I spat at his burning body.
"Shoot through the head and burn the bodies."
I turned and exited the factory before the flames could reach me, stepping outside into the cool night air. Now that I wasn't running for my life, I had the time to consider Monroe's words. I had come here for answers, and now I was all alone, with more questions than ever. Who was she? What gift had I received? What did Dia have to do with any of this? How could he say she was not my wife? I remembered her, nothing else, but she was there. Her laughter, her white dress, her long, blonde hair. "You're perfect, Kayla." The pain from the gunshot distracted me way too much. The Gray Man, my wizard, was dead. No one would save me now. My head was spinning. The adrenaline from literally fighting for my life left my body quickly. Bright spots were dancing in front of my eyes. I couldn't focus my thoughts anymore. I was dizzy. The gun dropped from my hands, and I fell onto the floor. My vision faded to black before I hit the ground. I lay there for a while, keeping my eyes closed. I felt grass on my skin, although I was sure I had collapsed on asphalt. The pain had disappeared, yet I didn't dare to move because I feared it would return.
"Do you know how the fairy tale ends?"
I knew the voice. I knew it all too well. And still, I didn't dare to open my eyes, because if that was just a dream, I didn't want to wake up. I wouldn't shatter the illusion of Dia being close to me.
"The girl enters the castle and finds the wizard dead," Dia explained. "She turns on the dreamer, angry that he has betrayed her like this. She kills him and burns the nightmare to cinders, leaving nothing but an ashen wasteland. And as she stands in the remains of her world, the ghost of the dreamer appears to her. 'Why can't I wake up?' she asks herself. Do you know the answer, Kayla?"
I didn't respond.
Dia giggled. "The girl is dead."
She answered the question herself.
"Doomed to dream for all eternity. So why did you lie to me?" she says to the dreamer's ghost. "Why did you tell me the nightmare will end?" And he shakes his head and smiles a sad smile. "Because there was nothing left for you but pleasant lies," he tells her, and disappears forever. The girl has killed the only friend she had left, and is trapped in her desolated nightmare forever.
I winced. Why? Why did my wife tell me that? What was going on here?
"There isn't always a happy end, Kayla. And now, show me a little respect and get up. Playing dead doesn't suit you."
I opened my eyes and realized I was lying in front of the grave of the nameless child. It was still night, but the grave was different now. Flowers were placed all around it, and candles were lit. And right in front of the tombstone stood my wife. It was weird to see her face after trying to recall it for what seemed like eternity. She was beautiful, stunning even. Bright blue eyes, face like an angel, long blonde hair falling down to her waist. She wore a long white dress.
"Dear,"
I whispered. She laughed again.
"Oh, so you remember our conversation. How unexpected."
"Wait." I slowly stood up.
"What are you talking about?"
"Our little meeting after you arrived," she explained patiently.
"I don't understand."
Instinctively, I reached for the knife in my pocket, but it wasn't there. I had no weapons.
"You're my wife. We came here together."
"Wife," she repeated.
"Oh, dear, you don't remember anything."
"Explain it, then,"
I demanded. The whole situation was off, almost unreal, but vaguely familiar, like an old memory, just out of reach.
"What is this place? Where am I?"
"If you want me to." She leaned casually against the tombstone.
"This is my grave, Kayla. My body is buried here."
I looked at the woman who I had called my wife mere minutes ago. The woman I had wanted to find so desperately, who had been my sole motivation for going further and further in this hellscape.
But I...
She shut me up with a simple gesture.
"Now, as you might realize, I don't quite agree with being dead, since I can still exist in dreams. Which is, to be honest, not enough. I want to return to the real world, Kayla. But I need a body. A capable one, to be exact."
"What the hell are you talking about?" I screamed at her. None of that made sense. Dia was my wife. I remembered her.
Her laugh, the white dress.
"You're perfect, Kayla."
"About the people you met. All of them seemed oh so promising, and yet they didn't fit."
"Monroe."
I didn't finish the question.
"He was almost perfect," she sighed. "The others were nothing. Reduced to insanity in such a short amount of time, he handled it well, but the madness took over after all."
My mind tried to comprehend the words, but failed. I felt dizzy again, and leaned onto a nearby gravestone for support.
"Stop speaking in riddles."
"I'm not," she replied. "You're just a little slow."
This was my wife, I thought. And yet, she was a perfect stranger at the same time. My memories were confusing. I felt like my head was about to explode.
"The seamstress and the hangman and Monroe, they were not compatible with you."
"See? Not so hard when you use your brain a little."
She flashed a condescending smile.
"Poor Jack took it a little personally, I think. He became obsessed with me, tried so hard to be perfect, so maybe he could fulfill the role he so desperately craved."
"What about the ghost? The gray man?"
She waved her hand dismissively.
"Merely an echo of another failure. He's no different from the others."
"Why did he help me then?"
Exacerbated, I threw my hands in the air.
"Because he hates me. Contrary to Monroe, he never wanted to become my vessel. Maybe he thought he could actually save you."
She laughed.
"Poor, confused man."
"This is ridiculous," I snapped. "So, you're not my wife. Why do I remember you then? What happened? Why am I here? I survived a bullet through the head, goddammit.
I can't remember anything, and I want answers right now.
For what felt like hours, she simply looked at me, the hint of a smile on her lips.
You still don't realize, she then said. Are you hungry, Kayla? Thirsty?
I blinked. What did that have to do with anything?
No, I'm not, I answered. You don't need to eat or drink. A bullet doesn't kill you. You really can't figure it out by yourself.
She raised an eyebrow. As I didn't answer, her lips twisted into a smirk.
You're dead, Kayla.
The terror that gripped me in that moment was indescribable. I felt my whole body go numb. My skin ran cold as I clutched onto the gravestone. That wasn't true. It couldn't be. I was standing there. I was alive. There was no way that could be true. I shook my head again and again and again as if I could simply shake the thought away. And suddenly, memories flooded my racing mind as all the pieces of the puzzle fell into place.
I had been in the car, the police car. My partner had sat in the driver's seat, proudly showing me his wedding ring, a silver one with a blue crystal inside.
We'd been driving towards a town called Emerald Bay, as apparently some campers had gone missing there. The sun had just set as we entered the woods, when all of a sudden, a person appeared on the road right in front of us. The car had spiraled out of control and crashed against a tree. It caught on fire immediately. I had tried to get out, but the door wouldn't budge, and I had felt the fire burning the skin off my bones. I had screamed until I had finally fallen unconscious. I had died at that point. And then I woke up again, in this exact place, with Dia in front of me. She had asked me if I wanted to live, and of course, I had agreed immediately.
You're perfect, Kayla, she had said with a smile,
and then shadows had taken over my body, and I had woken up in the woods, my body burnt, and my mind delirious from fever. The crashed car in the woods had been mine. The dead policeman had been my partner. I was dead.
Do you remember now?
Dia asked. My body was shaking. I nodded, tried to breathe, and realized at the same time that it didn't matter. I did not need oxygen anymore. I was a walking corpse.
You want me as your new body? I said to Dia.
My voice sounded weak.
Oh, I would have loved to have you, she agreed. But sadly, you don't fit. Not as perfectly as I thought, after all.
Then let me go.
She laughed.
You died, Kayla. You're only standing here because my shadows keep your heart beating. There's no place left for you but my nightmare.
I wrapped my arms tightly around my torso, drawing shaky breaths. The wife I had searched for did not exist. There was no way for me to go home. All hope was lost.
What do you want from me?
I asked Dia weakly.
For now? Nothing.
She stepped closer and laid a hand on my arm.
The madness will take you soon enough, and you'll bring me new bodies, just like Jack did.
I shook my head.
Never, I spat. We'll see about that, Kayla.
She turned around and walked away, back towards the grave, as the world around me faded to white. I woke up in front of the factory again. The wound in my shoulder no longer existed. Now, this is the end. I wrote everything down, and if this warning reaches you, please remember to stay away from Emerald Bay. No matter what reason could lead you here, I still don't understand everything. But most of it is clear now. Monroe has just saved me to sacrifice me to his beloved Dia himself. The Gray Man has saved me to spite Dia, and everybody else has just succumbed to insanity. This place is her dream, and yet, somehow, it's also real. I'm afraid of what she might be capable of if she ever finds a suitable body. The moon stands unmoving on the black sky. Everything I've thought to remember is a lie. I have no wife. I am not alive. All I have done since I woke up in the forest has been for nothing. I won't end like the others. I won't kill innocent people and help Dia's mad goal. As soon as this is finished, I will return to the factory, douse myself in gasoline, and burn this body to ashes. I'm hyper-aware of the shadows inside me, constricting around my heart to keep it beating. I don't remember anything before the car crash. To anyone I might leave behind, I'm sorry. And goodbye. My story is over. No last sunrise for me to see. I hope this reaches the real world, however that might be possible. Stay away from Emerald Bay. Only death waits here. Kayla Chase.
This is where the diary ends. Dismissing this as a made-up story would be easy, I know, but I guess I should mention that my friend returned to the place where they found the diary. They've read it, too, and decided against all the warnings to search for Emerald Bay. According to them, they had made it into the woods where the hunter's cabin was supposed to be when they encountered a person with charred skin. They aren't sure if the burnt person wanted to attack them or drive them off, but they ran away and haven't returned there yet. They got separated, though, and one hasn't come back yet.